it doesn't look the same. It's, you know, it's visibly different. So, you know, it's the scary words in investing, it's different this time. Well, like, this is measurably different this time. The pattern does not correspond to what we've seen. And despite today's volatility, as you and I are recording, the current uptrend doesn't look broken yet. You know, there's a big spike, but if you pull back and look at it, you know, there's a spike on what looks like an uptrend. It hasn't rolled over in the way that it did after the previous peaks. So I'm not a technical guy. We're talking about betting on capital gains, hockey sticks, that sort of thing, right? The idea is to buy low, sell high. So if you bought silver at 100 plus because some guru on YouTube said it was going to 400, that's not buying low, right? I don't think the AI thing is going away. I think it's real, even if it's not actual intelligence. It's real, it's valuable. We're going to use more and more and more of it. And that's extremely bullish for all the critical minerals that are necessary to make that happen. There's just no other way. You can't recycle twice as much copper as exists in the world. I mean, above ground purified. You can't recycle that into existence. You've got to mine more of it.
All right, good day, everybody. Welcome back to the show. I'm just Steve Yang here with Natural Resource Stocks, where we mine for stories that matter. And today I'm thrilled to have Lobo Tigre as my guest. Lobo is a founder, analyst, and editor of The Independent Speculator, and widely regarded as a leading voice and longtime expert in metals, critical minerals, commodities, and markets. Lobo, it's great to have you back. Thanks for coming on to join us here.
Sure, Steve. Happy to be on the show.
Lobo, with gold and silver spiking and then pulling back, how do you make sense of the rush and the recent pullbacks? Do you see further volatility ahead, and what's your outlook for the year?
Yes, and I'm bullish. So I just charted this in my most recent weekly edition, my macro letter, which is free, by the way. If you look at the big peak that we just saw, and you compare it to the previous two peaks that we have in the entire time, you know, big ones since gold has been freed to trade against the dollar in 1971, it doesn't look the same. It's, you know, it's visibly different. So, you know, the scary words in investing, it's different this time. Well, like, this is measurably different this time. The pattern does not correspond to what we've seen. And despite today's volatility, as you and I are recording, the current uptrend doesn't look broken yet. You know, there's a big spike, but if you pull back and look at it, you know, there's a spike on what looks like an uptrend. It hasn't rolled over in the way that it did after the previous peaks. So I'm not a technical guy, you know, a chartist per se, but it is somewhat reassuring because you have these fundamental views, you know, the debasement trade or central bank gold buying. And you know, the problem with big macro calls like that is even if you're right, it doesn't tell you what happens next. Right. You know, the markets can remain irrational longer than you can remain solvent, all that stuff. Sorry, a bit of a long-winded answer here. But what I'm saying is, you know, for all the reasons that gold bulls were bullish, none of that's changed. And I'm definitely in that camp. But what's new in my mind is that as I'm saying, looking at these charts, you can see that this time is not yet looking like previous peaks. So I like it when the technicals align with the fundamentals, in my view. I've been looking for some time. You know, anything goes like a hockey stick, that can't, you know, no price can go vertical forever, right? So there's no surprise. And you know, I didn't get a lot of friends calling for some kind of correction before it happened. But now that it's happened, you know, remember that my call wasn't, oh, this is the end of the market. My call was, I think we're headed for a period of consolidation and correction, like we saw at 3,000, like we saw at 2,000, before the next big move higher. So far, what's happening is as disconcerting as it is, especially to the Johnny come latelys, it actually fits the pattern of what I was looking for.
So you say it fits the pattern of what you're looking for, but overall, when you're comparing back to the 70s, early 70s, or the gold peaks, you say it looks fundamentally different. Does that just mean we just haven't seen it go as high as it will go? Could you expound on a little bit more of what it means that this is what you're expecting, but the patterns look different?
Yeah. So what I was expecting was the macro case. The patterns look different as a technical view, not it's a chart view. I don't have those handy for this, but they are available for free on the website. It's in the last weekend's edition of the digest. You do have to register to see it, but it is free. And you can see the charts, and it works out neatly that if you plot them by dollar and you put a zero under the peak, then you get plus or minus. So we looked at it plus or minus 3 years, plus or minus 1 year, plus or minus 2 months. And what I'm saying is that the slopes of those ramp ups, the shoulders, as it were, look different. So, and I haven't heard any TAs, you know, jump up and down and tell me I'm doing everything wrong. Because, but to me, it just visually makes sense that this time look. It maybe the summary is it looks like we're still on the ramp up phase, right? It does not look like the previous peaks. It does not look like it's rolling over, current volatility notwithstanding.
So one of the things I saw, I believe you posted as well, there was an image where there's two lines where one, like silver is like $25, might have been gold, but basically for illustration purposes, like silver is $25 and nobody's in line. That's probably gold, but let's just use silver. And but they're like, when it's over 100, everyone's in line. And, you know, the Johnny come late people, they, you know, see the, you know, they catch on the FOMO train, and then they see that it basically drops down to 70. They panic, and so in terms of, like, you know, they'll listen to a podcast and hear that silver is going to go to $400, and they panic and they sell when they see it go back down to 70, or you know, like they ask, okay, you're bullish on gold and silver, but you're also expecting volatility. So, you know, how do you decide when a commodity price is worth entering? You know, people talk about you make or lose money when you enter. And then where do you see the biggest mispricings right now at the moment?
Well, there is actually a tried, true, tested answer for this. And it's not something I invented. You know, it's old as the hills and therefore boring, and maybe people don't want to hear it, but it works. I mean, the formula for speculative investing, I mean, we're not talking about deploying for yield, you know, measurable yield and dividends and that sort of thing. We're talking about betting on capital gains, hockey sticks, that sort of thing, right? The idea is to buy low, sell high. Mm-hmm. So if you bought silver at 100 plus because some guru on YouTube said it was going to 400, that's not buying low. Right, you're like twice, you know, all-time highs, previous all-time highs, at least nominally, right? You can argue, oh well, it should go to 400 or 200 plus is would be the CPI adjusted all-time high. Sure, logically, you know, again, the macro case can be right, but it doesn't tell you what will happen next. Silver over 100 when the previous peaks were 50 is not a buy low opportunity. I'm not anti-silver. I'm not hating on silver. I'm just saying this is an objective, and reasonable thing that I'm saying. So, you know, do I know where the market's going to peak? Did I know that, you know, late January was going to be this big scare moment? No, I was saying that, you know, buy low, you know, at the Vancouver conference, just, you know, days before the correction started, my whole topic of my speech was buy low. I don't know where the top is. I'm excited. I'm long. I'm making a bunch of money here. But nobody goes broke taking profits on the way up. And if you see opportunities to buy low, then cashing out some of your big wins to fund those will automatically rotate you into something else. So I didn't know what was going to happen. But just following that basic discipline, you know, where is my opportunity to buy low? Just look for that. And don't worry about whether it's the top or the bottom or any of that stuff, right? You know, that would have protected you if you had acted on that, you know, immediately before this correction, even if you didn't know the correction was coming. So I'm not claiming gurudom or I have a crystal ball. Oh, yeah. Here's my magic eight ball. This is my crystal ball, right? I'm not claiming this actually works. It's a joke. But I am claiming that basic speculator's discipline works. Buy low, sell high. That's all you got to do. Where can I buy low today? You do that and you rotate and it will naturally diversify you. And, you know, if you're a little too long, a little a little too long, like you're long the commodity or whatever, the asset, and you hold it too long and then it goes south on you, just doing that discipline, you're not going to get wiped out. Because you've taken profits, you're already diversified. You don't have all your bets in one basket. Like, you know, I think the metals bulls could take a lesson from the Bitcoin hodlers on this. You know, Bitcoin drops 50% in a couple, you know, over the last year, and none of them are panicking. Maybe somebody who did top ticket, you know, Johnny come lately there, maybe they're not feeling so great. But the sector, the mood in the crypto space is not, woe is me, this is terrible. The mood is, people don't get it. You know, I'm doubling down. I have to, whether or not you like Bitcoin is not the point here. The attitude, I think, is really interesting. If you believe in your thesis, then that's how you do things.
Is there a big mispricing that you see in the commodity space now?
Right. So where's the buy low opportunity? Well, when I said that before, when I shifted my portfolio, what I wrote a couple months ago to clients of the independent speculator was, I'm finally ready to agree with Rick Rule that oil is hated enough that there are opportunities of, you know, objectively buy low type opportunities in the oil patch. That is no longer quite the case. You know, honestly, pretty much the everything bubble is back. But, you know, the good news is that this AI scare that we've got in the broader markets is really rocking the boat for everybody. Between that and the possibility that, you know, Trump will impress the regime in Iran enough to come up with some kind of deal that gives everybody an off-ramp, you know, that would likely send oil prices lower, and then a big AI scare and a pullback would probably whack energy, copper, critical minerals, all that stuff. And by the way, like an orderly deflation of the AI bubble is sort of, you know, it's helpful, but not great. If things really blew up in the AI space, like, you know, people just stops got triggered, waterfall event ensued, you know, panic on Wall Street. I think that'd be great for us as resource speculators, because the commodities are going to be used anyway. And, yeah. It'd be like DeepSeek. When DeepSeek, a little bit over a year ago, put everything on sale for the wrong reason, that was the perfect time to buy. So for whatever it's worth, I'm not predicting this. I'm just saying, you know, something to stick away in the back of your mind. If this happens, you know, you'll be glad that you have taken some profits, you're looking for where to buy low, and you're ready, and not just ready to act, and you understand, but you've got the cash to act when that buy low opportunity presents itself. When people say, oh, he lacks convictions, he sold too soon, you know, it's going to the moon, all that stuff, you know, fine, knock yourself out. But when the next opportunity presents itself, if you're all in, you're liquid, you can't take advantage of it.
Right. So I do want to ask you about the AI scare in a sec, but I want to go back to buying low. And how do you know it's low? Like, people talk about, you know, true value. And how do you assess that? Like, what does that even mean?
Sure. Well, if you look at oil, for example, and you adjust it for inflation, it's on the low end of its trading range, and it looks to be carving out a bottom. It's really the geopolitical situation that has prevented me from going more into the oil patch already. You know, if that weren't the case, I just, you know, looking at the market, you know, I think there's reasonable arguments, Doomberg notwithstanding, that for the near term, and you know, that oil actually objectively is cheap. Just real quick on the Doomberg thing, I'm not throwing him under the bus. I think he's probably right. But that's a 50-year macro thesis he's articulating. Again, you know, it doesn't tell me that this year oil won't go higher.
So what's geopolitical kicker are you watching?
Yeah, we talked about Iran already. That's now, like this week or next weekend, we could either be at war with Iran again, mm-hmm. or things could blow over. And I don't know what's going to happen again. Don't take the Magic 8 Ball too seriously.
Yeah.
But it seems to me that the regional powers, including U.S. allies, have told Trump, you know, you could blow him up and maybe kill Khamenei or whatever, but not before they send missiles and blow up our oil fields. So please don't do that. And whether or not he cares about our allies in the Middle East, I think he does care about choking off oil supply. He's got midterms coming up. The one thing that's making inflation look tolerable in the United States right now is cheaper energy prices. If you look at the latest CPI report and you look at the breakdown of the different things that go into it, basically everything important is up, you know, on the plus side of the scale. And then there's this big negative on gasoline prices that makes the whole thing seem more tolerable. You take that away on gasoline prices,
yeah,
and the whole conversation shifts, the whole balance shifts. And I don't think Trump wants that. So, you know, I feel for the people who died protesting in Iran, but it looks to me like Trump wants to make a deal here. He really doesn't want to blow up the Middle East. And we'll see. if that happens, I think there's near-term downside, or rather, there's a near-term buying opportunity in the oil patch. So I'm ready to go. I've got cash because I took some profits before the correction, right? I've got cash and I get the thesis. But it's just really hard for me to pull the trigger in front of this, you know, possibly really big market moving event in the very near term. Farther ahead, the same thing goes for Ukraine. If you know, Trump can browbeat Ukraine into agreeing to, you know, an egregious deal with the Russians, and that brings Russian oil back into the global market without having to, you know, the inefficiencies of shadow fleets and selling it to India to sell it back to Europe and all that stuff, you know, that would likely put near-term downside, you know, or create opportunities to buy. So my thesis here is 2 or 3 years, I think oil is going to make us a lot of money. But I'm just a little hesitant to jump in right now. But the answer to your question was, you look at these things, and okay, you know, obviously, even on an inflation-adjusted basis, it's hard to argue that gold and silver are cheap, or even the PGMs. Or copper, you know, it looks crazy lately at all-time highs, but those are nominal. You know, it looks cheaper if you adjust it for inflation, but not really cheap. The one that looks cheapest to me of the commodities is really oil. Well, I mean, you could argue something like nickel or lithium or something, but those markets are much trickier. And especially in lithium, there's tons of lithium out there, and not just lithium, but like idle mines waiting for higher prices to come back again. So for now, I really have a very simple answer. I think the oil patch has the best combination of being objectively low-ish.
Yeah.
And selectively, there are companies there that are not at all-time highs or 52-week highs, that, you know, good companies that are available.
Lobo, I want to move back to AI. As we all know, AI is driving massive demand, but people are reacting differently to it. You know, some chase big tech, others focus on critical minerals. You know, where do you see the overlooked opportunities in the AI boom? And is there anything that you'd recommend people avoid?
Yeah, I'm skeptical of the data center business itself. And I'm not the only one to articulate this. I think the you know, Michael Burry, the great short guy, big short guy, he's talked about how, you know, these, you know, the latest Blackwell chip from NVIDIA, whatever, next year there'll be another one, right? You know, the depreciation on these things is much faster. People say you build a data center and you're a landlord of a very rapidly depreciating asset.
Yeah.
And that kind of scares me, you know, people. So, and the AI itself, nobody knows what the killer app is going to be. Like ChatGPT still says really stupid shit. That's the purpose. I mean, really. And the better models, I mean, we use them in our team to help us with our research. But I just tweeted about how, you know, we use actual intelligence, not artificial intelligence, because it's not just the hallucinations. It just misses stuff. And it's just sometimes so gobsmackingly wrong
Yeah.
And what makes it more dangerous is it's not just wrong, is it sounds so right. You know, it lists you 27 sources and academic papers, and the phrasing is perfect. It's never, there's no stuttering ums and ahs or grammatical mistakes. It, you know, it sounds very erudite, but it's just completely wrong. So the AI itself, I mean, somebody's going to be the Amazon of AI or the Google of AI, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know who that is. I don't think anybody knows who that is, not even Amazon and Google as much as they'd like to be. So not the AI itself, not the data centers. And that brings me back, you know, maybe I'm biased, but that brings me back to my wheelhouse, the critical minerals that are necessary no matter what. And by no matter what, I don't just mean in the AI build out, though that is there. I mean, you know, Dr. Copper was called that for decades before anybody even thought about AI outside of a few science fiction authors. And same for copper in industry and housing and pipes and all this stuff, you know, before the EV thing came up. So simple progress and population growth is bullish for all of these essential minerals. But on top of that, the EV thing, that is happening. You may hate EVs, that's fine. I don't want EVs shoved down my throat either. But the world is adopting. And, you know, maybe not so much in North America, but around the world, that is just not going away. And those things, and the hybrids too, use tons of copper and other silver, other minerals. So that's just not going away. And the AI thing, you know, like the DeepSeek scare, you know, is so ridiculous. But, you know, suddenly China comes up with a model that's 100 times cheaper to train. And if people sell everything, like that's the end of the... No, that's what happened. Instead of the hyperscalers saying, oh, well, we don't need such big data centers. They said, oh, well, we'll just use more AI, right? It's more efficient. Great. We can use 100 times more of it. So I think to the degree that the AI scare now seems emotional in the marketplace, that's a very good thing. Because when Mr. Market overreacts, it creates opportunities. And that, you know, I just made fun of how phenomenally wrong the AIs can be, but they are useful. We do use it to supplement, to amplify the human intelligence that we use. Yeah. And it saves us tons of time. And if I write a query like, what the heck just happened to all the silver miners in Mexico?
Yeah.
And it spends 5 minutes generating an answer for me. That is a huge amount of compute because it doesn't understand anything. It reads the entire internet and bubbles it down to like that is such an inefficient way to answer questions. Like I think the human brain uses something like 12 watts of power, and these things use gigawatts of power. I don't know, just to answer one question, but it's clearly not doing things the way we do them.
No,
that inefficiency. I don't know if there is a problem, but like we don't know what consciousness is. How the heck can we get a program something that philosophers have been debating for thousands of years and nobody really understands, right? So the stuff that's necessary here, I think it's not going away. If we have better AI, we'll just use more of it. And yes, despite me making fun of it, it does actually help. And people are going to use more and more of this.
Yeah.
You know, people are all upset now. Oh, these data centers, they're charging up our electricity bills. Why are data centers more important than me being able to afford my electric bill? Well, yeah, but you're using your phone to search for your favorite song or all that. Like you're using this thing that you're complaining about driving up your electricity bill. So at the end of the day, the product is as crippled as it is still, you know, as crappy as it is still, it's already valuable and people are just using more and more of this. So I don't think the AI thing is going away. I think it's real, even if it's not actual intelligence. It's real. It's valuable. We're going to use more and more and more of it. And that's extremely bullish for all the critical minerals that are necessary to make that happen. There's just no other way. You can't recycle twice as much copper as exists in the world. I mean, above ground purified. You can't recycle that into existence. You've got to mine more of it.
You mentioned that some markets are trickier. You mentioned that lithium, you know, there's a lot of underutilized places. Like, is there a certain commodity or critical minerals that you are more enthusiastic than others?
Well, believe it or not, I really like silver on this account. I can't call it a buy low opportunity, but over time, I think that, you know, it just seems like if not every day, every week, they discover some new use for silver. And these data centers, they use like millions of ounces. It's not just a picogram of, you know, tantalum or something in your iPhone screen. It's kilotons of the stuff, right? Yeah. And by the way, the power for all this stuff, that's the other thing. I was bullish on uranium before the AI thing came along, but I think the AI thing absolutely turbocharges it. People argue about, well, it's, you know, it's not as efficient, or renewables are cheaper than nuclear now, or, you know, fine. But what are the hyperscalers doing? What are the AI companies doing? They're building nuclear power plants. Like, the smartest people on the planet, the people who understand this technology the best, they're not building windmill farms.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe they are, but they're also building nuclear. I agree with Thunberg on this too. I think gas, natural gas, is a huge beneficiary of the AI boom, because it's an everywhere thing. So I do think that the energy side, it's not just the hard minerals, but the energy components. And I particularly like uranium because it doesn't need the AI. Like, the BRICS countries are, you know, doubling their nuclear power using uranium, not thorium yet. Thorium fans, maybe in the future, but not yet, right? So I think these are very, very robust demand trends. And to the degree that we have volatility on the way, that's a buying opportunity. And the one caveat I would throw in there is my two favorites in this space are copper and uranium. And I like them both, and maybe see more near-term upside in uranium than copper. But there's always the possibility of another nuclear scare. Now, I don't worry about this. I don't factor it into my investment decisions at all. But it would be irresponsible for me to tell people, yeah, I love uranium, and not mention that, you know, it's a trade that could literally melt down on you. You know, if that happens, you cannot hit the bid fast enough. And so don't go there unless you're willing to accept that possibility. I am. And so far, you know, I made a lot of money while, you know, nothing has happened. Mm. Nothing bad, I mean.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Lobo, speaking of things that happen bad, or a nuclear meltdown, or, you know, we talked about the AI scare. Last time we spoke, you talked about having a lot of cash, or that's, you found liquidity as something that was high on your radar. I'm curious as to a doomsday scenario, if the market were to crash, and how important is it to have some sort of survival kit in your portfolio, and what assets or strategies do you focus on when you're preparing for one?
Well, I may disappoint you here, because, you know, if the brown stuff really hits the fan, your access to that portfolio is just, if you can even get on, like, okay, let's say China goes for Taiwan, just for example, not picking on anyone, not taking sides here.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's say China goes for Taiwan and West steps up and says, no, sir. The immediate thing, I don't know how that goes. I don't know how it plays out, but I would bet, I am betting personally with my own net worth, that the immediate thing that happens is China throws all that, you know, cyber warfare that they've been practicing for decades. They throw all that into effect. The internet goes down everywhere. You know, maybe even your power utility and your water utility shuts down. You know, we've seen those viruses in water company software, right? The so-called soft targets. Mm-hmm. Like, I think they throw the book at us. And I don't know if both sides do it immediately or not. I don't think it just stays, you know, pea shooters and on boats floating around Taiwan. I think, you know, that World War III does not look like anything we've seen before. I mean, the drones and all the tech that we've seen in Ukraine gives us a hint of what's coming. If, you know, you're asking for a worst case scenario, is push comes to shove in the world, between the world's two biggest economies, and it doesn't stay polite. In that case, I don't think I'll be able to access my brokerage account for a decade. Right? I mean, I'm not joking. I mean it. At that point, I'm not worried about my brokerage account. I'm worried about the physical gold and trying to remember which palm tree I buried it under. And is my backup generator well serviced and ready to go? Do I have fuel for it? Right? Here in Puerto Rico, it's a little bit different, but I used to call it the three G's: gold, guns, and generators. That's my get out of Dodge kit. You know, that I don't want to sound too extreme, but you asked me for worst case scenario. Worst case scenario is, you know, that bunker in Idaho doesn't sound so crazy these days. Just look at the world around us. And if you can't afford that, the very least you should do is make sure that you have stacked significant bullion, you know, not a month or two's expense, but like a couple years worth of your living expenses that you can access. You can hold it in your hand, even if all the cash registers, which are all digital and connected online, they all shut down. You go to the supermarket and there's no lights. There's nothing to run the cash registers. Who the heck has, you know, paper in their pocket anymore? Right. You know, even if you did have some funny little bills, you know, wouldn't you be worried about how much they'd be worth? Okay, they might work for a little while. But I do think in the worst case scenario, people will remember what real money is, and you will want some in your personal possession.
Lobo, speaking of real money, Justin Bieber bought an NFT for $1.3 million that today is valued at $12,000. $1.3 million to $12,000. Where do you see investors making the biggest mistakes today? And if you could tell listeners just maybe one thing to stop doing or one myth to debunk, what would that be?
Well, I think the overall lesson here is that skepticism pays over time. And that's not one myth or one thing, but like that is the cardinal virtue of the disciplined speculator, is discipline. And in our space, right, I deal with people all the time like, oh, what do you think about this company? They're going to double the resource this year. Like, well, how do you know that? Well, management said so. Well, of course they said so. Right. So I'm not just throwing Justin Bieber under the bus here or whatever, but anytime you give into FOMO, anytime you go with the emotional wave, sure, you can buy high and sell higher if the greater fool comes along. But that's not the idea. That's not the tried and true thing that works time over time, and not only makes you money, but helps you keep money, is buy low, sell high. You got to do both. You got to be skeptical. You got to be an independent speculator and look for opportunities to buy low. Don't forget the sell high part. Just keep doing that. And I think you'll outperform the herd.
Speaking of the independent speculator, love for people to know what that's all about and the importance of being independent. If you can tell us what you guys do and how you guys are different and how people can find and connect with you.
Well, for the three people who didn't stop listening, let me just out the last thing you said, and that is independent speculator means a couple of things. One is I'm not for sale, right? There is no amount of money a company can give me to earn a positive rating when they deserve a negative one. And I think something like 90% of the 1,000 or so companies we cover have a thumbs down or a clause down, as the case may be for a wolf. So we are independent, but it's also the idea is like we used to say, you know, if you read a Victorian novel or something, you know, a man of independent means. What that meant was they had won Kiyosaki's race, right? They got out of the rat race. They weren't working for money. The money worked for them. They had independent means. They didn't have to have a job. Their assets funded their lifestyle. So the goal of the independent speculator is to help independent-minded people, disciplined people who can think for themselves, to achieve that financial independence. So that's the overall idea. Bit of a sales pitch there. Sorry. We mentioned earlier free resources. So I'll just tell people there is the free weekly digest. If you're intrigued by what I'm saying here, you know, if you sign up for that, I can't guarantee that you'll like anything I provide or agree with me or not, but I can guarantee that we will not spam you with a flood of daily advertisements. I hate that. You get one notification per week and then decide where to go from there.
For everyone listening, I will put Lobo's links to the independent speculator, his socials, in the show notes. I'm just Steve Yang, learning alongside you from people smarter than me, like Lobo. Everybody stay smart, stay curious, stay disciplined. Lobo, thanks again for joining us. It's always great to have you back.
Thank you, Steve.